guys, welcome back to the Kennedy Dynasty podcast. I'm your host, Allison, and I hope you are having a great week. A couple reminders before the episode. Please remember to subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or on YouTube even. I'm on YouTube now, which is super fun. So make sure you're subscribed for everything so you never miss an episode dropping. Also, please remember that I have merch and I have a recommendations Amazon site. I have a blog. I even have Patreon if you want to support me there. So check out all those links I will put in the description of this episode. Also, if you like the podcast, please rate it 5 stars and write a positive written review. That helps me out so much. I hope you enjoy part 2 of our Bay of Pigs conversation starting now.
So JFK takes office and the inability to be what they termed as a cold warrior, right? Kennedy wants to be a cold warrior. He wants to take the foreign policy by the throat, and he wants to engage with it. Why? Well, the big problem is that a lot of his other policy ideals, a part of what he calls his New Frontier program, which I didn't think about this the other day. We should do a whole episode on the New Frontier.
I was thinking the same thing. We should, yeah.
It's going to be really difficult to get these things passed through because you have to go through Congress to get a lot of it done. Mm-hmm. Okay. So Kennedy had a problem coming in immediately that like, he's going to have to get to everything he wants to do in his New Frontier program. He has to get done through Congress. His only real option going forward to make a big move is foreign policy. Mm-hmm. And the CIA plops on his desk. Hey, 2 years ago, your predecessor, Ike, approved a $13 million program and we've got it ready to go. What do you think? And that program would become the Bay of Pigs invasion. Before any of that happens, though, John F. Kennedy, of course, almost immediately cuts off all ties to Cuba and engages in an embargo. Now, have you heard the story about the cigars?
I was about to say, have you heard that? Yeah.
Of course, right? John F. Kennedy decides to put an embargo on Cuba. But before he does that, he sends one of his aides to go buy 2,500 Cuban cigars, and then he closes the...
Honestly, that cracks me up. Like, I love it. Like, what a move.
What a move, right?
Oh, man. I love it.
And so he's got this situation. He's inherited this situation. His advisors are talking to him about it, and he's talking to them about it, and he needs to appear tough. He's got to do something. Now, he can't invade Cuba on his own. He can't just send American troops to Cuba, okay? The reason is because it would be seen as an act of war, mm-hmm. all right? And that act of war might cause World War III, which, if you didn't know, would be bad.
I guessed.
I mean, you know.
I would have gotten that right on a test.
yes, but the CIA says, okay, we've got this idea. We've got an incredible number of Cuban exiles living in the United States, mm-hmm. specifically in Miami, Florida. Plenty of them are anti-Fidel Castro. They left after the revolution or during the revolution. What if we get them to invade Cuba for us? And then it wouldn't be the United States invading Cuba. It would be Cubans invading Cuba. And if somehow they were able to achieve weapons, hey, right?
Yeah.
If somehow they were able to get some overwhelming force and they were to win, hey, who knows where that support came from, but either way, all of a sudden, bing, bang, boom, Fidel Castro's no more. And communism in our sphere is no longer in danger. And so Kennedy goes, okay, let's do it. His advisors almost immediately tell him, like, honestly, this may be too small to be effective and too large to go unnoticed. Mm-hmm. But he says, I've got to make a statement to the Soviet Union, to China, to the communist world. I've got to show them that we're not going to just let smaller countries fall to communism under my presidency. And so he sends, the CIA goes down to Miami and starts recruiting. They tell these Cuban exiles there's a rich Cuban, ex-Cuban guy who was under the Batista regime who wants to take back over Cuba, and that's where the funding comes from. But that that's happening in like February, March. But like the Cubans there in Miami figure out pretty quickly what's going on, like, and start referring to their benefactor as Uncle Sam.
Oh, wow.
So the other part of this problem is that there's a lot of people who are sympathetic to Fidel Castro. And mm-hmm. so almost immediately, as soon as this thing starts happening, Fidel Castro and the communist Cuban government find out about it.
Yikes.
They find out about the plan. This is not going well.
Mm-mm.
Okay. Not even a little, but they do forge ahead and they gather some 1400 ex-Cuban refugees.
Question.
Yeah.
Did Kennedy know at the time and his, you know, cabinet and everybody know that they were getting word of it there or anything like that? And they just pushed on
they assumed that there was, they did not believe that there was a leak.
That's what
I'll tell you why they didn't suspect this. It'll become apparent that Kennedy and his advisors were not aware that the Cubans were aware of it because of what happens in a minute.
Okay.
They get sent off to Guatemala. These guys do to train for like a month. The plan is to go as follows. These 1400 troops, they're called Brigade 2506. These 1400 troops are going to basically they found this little beach
mm-hmm.
on the southwestern side of Cuba, of the Cuban island, called the Bay of Pigs. And they're going to basically clandestinely invade, and then they're going to make a beachhead. The United States is going to support them with air and sea power, and then they're going to go into the countryside and be able to get all the people who were supporters of Batista to rise up and overtake the communist government, and then bada bing, bada boom, all of a sudden Cuba's capitalist again. One of the things they really want to do is to make sure that Cuba doesn't have the ability, or that Castro doesn't have the ability, to fight back. And so the CIA, in all of its wisdom, decides to take two B-26 bombers from the Second World War mm-hmm. and disguise them, like by painting them.
It's all just as like da da da. It's just like no.
So they paint these bombers, and so 2 days before the invasion, 2 days before the planned invasion, they fly them to Cuba to try to bomb Cuban airfields and destroy Castro's very small air force. The problem is that Castro had known about the plan all along and had moved all of his planes. So the bombings do not work. That's like step one of like how this goes poorly. Step one was honestly the idea in the first place. But step two is these bombers aren't able to dismantle or undo or destroy Castro's air force. 2 days later, in boats, in like fishing trawlers and little tugboats, 1,400 Cuban exiles travel from Nicaragua and Guatemala to the Bay of Pigs for the official invasion. It's time to overthrow Castro. And they make it to the beach. And that's like pretty much the only accomplishment that they get done.
Aww.
They actually get there. They establish a beachhead. But everything is going as the plan except for one small problem. One, the Bay of Pigs was a pretty shitty place to actually perform this procedure because mm-hmm. it was very secluded, very remote. There was not a lot of, it was a pretty long distance to the place they were planning on taking their, like to steady, establishing their base, which is in the mountains. And also it's just not a great, it's it's not a great terrain. But the other problem is that there's just a radio station on the beach. And they see all of this happening and they start to broadcast to all of Cuba. That there's an invasion.
No.
And somehow the CIA, with $13 million, which I'm pretty sure is the equivalent to like almost like $250 million today or maybe more, they didn't on their plan go, hey, there's a radio station. We should probably do something about it.
That's brutal.
So they're there, they're on the beach. They are trying to engage. The one ace that they have up their sleeve is that Kennedy and, of course, the United States are going to provide air support for them, which is going to give them the overwhelming firepower that they need
right.
to forge ahead, to go forward. And but by this time, because of the radio station, the next day, the world has gotten notice of what's going on. And John F. Kennedy, the freshly minted president, doesn't want to basically cause World War III. So he decides to not commit America's air power to the invasion. And then Fidel Castro shows up.
Pause. Do you think that that was a bad move for him not to commit America's air power? Purely your opinion.
There's an old hunting writer by the name of Robert Ruark. He was called the poor man's Hemingway. He used to lead safaris in Africa for like rich clientele, and he would write books about it. And one of his most famous book, or one of his most famous books, is literally entitled On Hunting in the African Safari. The title of the book being Use Enough Gun. And so the issue here, and this is, by the way, how many, I mean, think about every time in your life that you have done something, gotten scared in the middle of it, and decided to quit or to pull back when you probably should have just forged ahead. For you, I'm going to use an analogy from college, taking a U.S. history test. You can't just quit in the middle of it.
I didn't. I forged ahead. I found
and
you.
Exactly. Exactly. And so the problem here is that Kennedy just doesn't use enough gun. And yeah, it's a, it was. If you're going to commit to it, if you're going to commit to this kind of action, you can't just piss out in the middle of it. 2%. And so
if you don't agree, it's okay. It's an opinion.
It's not
okay,
you don't continue. Agree. I mean, I don't know how you can disagree with it.
No, but you don't understand. People get passionate. I get some DMs. Like people are very passionate about the subject, which I love. That's why I started it. So yeah.
Anyway, and so Castro shows up with 20,000 soldiers and tanks. And actually he decides to lead it himself. He's actually, and the tank that he used to repel the Bay of Pigs is sitting on a pedestal at the Museum of the Revolution. Super cool. But he was there. And it's like 2 days of fighting. 100 of these paramilitary forces die of the 1,400. They're stranded on the beaches. They're out of ammunition. The guns that they had were faulty anyway. And the United States isn't providing air support.
That's so sad.
By 19 April, they're defeated. Okay? And they take 1,200 prisoners. And it is a massive PR nightmare. It is a massive political failure, foreign affairs failure for the Kennedy administration, and a massive success for the Castro regime. The one upside to this, or not upside, but at least the thing that I think is at least redemption for Kennedy, if there is anything from this event, is that he's got these prisoners here, and he promised these people that the support of the United States, and he didn't give them air support when they needed it. So he very at least feels an obligation to help them. And so he does begin negotiations for their return.
Okay.
And luckily, he's back and forth with the Castro regime. At one time, they were going to do like 50 tractors was one of the offers. Like, we'll give us back the 1,200 guys for 50 tractors. They didn't want that. Eventually, what happens is that Kennedy trades about $53 million worth of food and medicine to the Castro regime for the return of the 1,200. 1,200 exile, or 1,200 paramilitary forces, Brigade 2506, as they would be called. And then, like a couple of months later, Kennedy goes down to Miami and meets with these guys in Miami, and they hand him a flag of the Brigade 2506, and he says, like, we're not gonna stop. This was only the beginning. Thank you for your service, but it's his fault that it didn't happen. That it didn't work in the first place, and so. What happens after that? So this is now the postlude. The postlude is that now Kennedy and the CIA develop what's called Operation Mongoose. Okay, and of course, I'm sure we've talked about Operation Mongoose before, but of course, that was the plan to try to kill Fidel Castro by any means necessary. The
question.
Most...
Oh, sorry, I don't
go
want
ahead.
To interrupt
go
you.
Go ahead.
Have you read, I want to do an episode purely on, if you've read in detail about it, the amount of times and different strategies and things that Kennedy and Bobby, and, well, those they're both Kennedys, but you know what I mean, JFK and Bobby, and, you know, a ton of other people in our government did to try to kill Fidel Castro.
Yeah.
Like, have you read about that?
I've read about a couple of the methods by which they tried to.
We should do an episode on that because I just think that would be crazy. I mean, they would say, like, he has a million lives. Like, he literally would dodge everything.
It's ironic that you say that because of the two methods I remember, one, and this might get you guys interested in this, we can go into this, the science of it. One was a exploding cigar.
Oh, I haven't heard that one. I heard about the pin.
The pin, there was a pin, and then there was also, like, they tried to train cats with bombs strapped to them.
I mean, that's wild. Like, and he dodged every single one of them. Didn't his, like, one of his aides or something use the pin and be poisoned? Like, it's just crazy. So, I don't know. That's a whole thing.
So, that leads to Operation Mongoose. And then, of course, that failure emboldens Castro, pushes Castro and Cuba closer to the Soviet Union, and then leads to the Cuban Missile Crisis more than a year later.
Mm-hmm.
Again, massive failure for John F. Kennedy right out the gate. One could say that naivete played a role. He had only been president for a couple of months, and he really mm-hmm. didn't really know what he was doing. Hubris is another reason that you could say. It was a plan that he wasn't fully aware of. He didn't commit enough resources to it. He didn't use enough gun.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you are interested in this, there is a book called The Brilliant Disaster. That's where I got a lot of this information from, and have done. So that's it. That's the story of the Bay of Pigs. It really isn't that long of a thing. There's not a lot of detail to it. It was,
yeah.
There's a lot of, like, intricacy that there were, you know, the battle that went on, but that stuff is kind of superfluous and, sure. You know, it's not necessary, but, like, there's a lot more, but it really is that simple. A plan developed during the Eisenhower administration that was put on Kennedy's desk the day after he became president. That he decided to go with. And mm-hmm. it just didn't work out in his favor.
Well, I am going to get into the question segment because I have a few questions for you from listeners.
Therefore, in answer to your question.
Question number one.
Why was JFK blamed for the fiasco even though it was Eisenhower's plan?
I'm going to say it again. Thrice I'm going to say it. He didn't use enough gun.
Yeah.
He didn't commit to the... He said, okay, and then he got scared. And he backed out. And you just, as far as foreign policy is concerned, when it comes to things like this, like JFK, basically he got worried that he was going to start World War III. And so it's essentially, he got up to the point where he had to commit America, because his advisors realized, hey, we're going to need to commit a whole lot more resources to this. And if we do, we risk starting a full-on war.
Yeah.
And... Yeah. I think it scared him, and he said, better to deal with 1,400 pissed off or 1,200 pissed off Cuban exiles than the whole communist world. Just didn't use enough gun, didn't commit to it. Mm-hmm. Once it got started, he didn't finish. He didn't finish it. And of course, by the way, this won't be the first time. This is the first time that Kennedy does this. And technically, he wasn't able to finish it because he was assassinated. But just remember that the Vietnam War was a similar circumstance, except the United States did the exact opposite. Kennedy is the one who sends the first advisors over to Vietnam. And Johnson then decides to basically full-on commit to the war, not because it was winnable. It wasn't. His advisor says, this isn't winnable. Johnson does the complete opposite that Kennedy does. Johnson commits 200,000 troops to Vietnam for mm-hmm. a war that is largely to preserve America's image.
Yeah. Do you think Eisenhower would have gone full force with it had it pushed while it was
Eisenhower had 2 years, and he didn't.
He just didn't. Yeah, that's what you're saying.
I think Eisenhower was a military... I mean, Eisenhower was the Supreme Allied Commander in World War II. I think Eisenhower would have been like... He would have seen the strategic folly of it, and he probably would have said no.
He was like, we'll put this on Kennedy's desk on January 19th. Like, slides.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay, question number two. Do you think the BOP invasion made Kennedy become more peace-centered?
No. But I think it taught him a lesson. I think it taught him that, like, he had, like, I think you see the lessons he learned from the Bay of Pigs in the Cuban Missile Crisis. Once he committed to preventing the Soviets from putting more missiles in Cuba and establishing the blockade, he basically said, if this goes to World War III, it's going to go to World War III. And that lesson made him a better president. Yeah. I mean, our failures are often our greatest learning moments, our greatest opportunities to learn. And I do think that I do think that his failure helped him become a better president for the two more years that he was president.
All right. Well, thank you so much to America's favorite history teacher, Ryan Pryor. Give him a hand. He's done his duty, and I will have him back super soon to probably do... What was that thing we just talked about we wanted to do?
Operation Mongoose?
Yeah.
Also, the New Frontier.
The New Frontier. I'll have him back for New Frontier episodes, because that would be super fun to get into and dive into with the old Pryor.
The New Frontier, and actually... That actually is a Bobby episode. That could be like four or five episodes, because Bobby largely takes on, as a part of his 1968 campaign, like the war on poverty. Part the big thing about the New Frontier was to end poverty in America, and Bobby was really about that as well. And I think that would be a really cool. There's a lot there between
Caroline
the two of them.
Caroline needs to join us for that too.
She likes that a lot. That's her bag for sure.
I know. We need to do it. That'd be fun. All right. Thank you so much for listening, and I will talk to you guys soon.
Come on and vote for Kennedy. Vote for Kennedy. Keep America strong. Kennedy, he just keeps rolling up. Kennedy, he just keeps rolling up.
History is the greatest adventure story. But does it ever leave you wondering what the women were doing all that time? This is Lori from the Her Half of History podcast, and the answer is that some women were seizing power, or escaping slavery, or spying for their country, or creating artistic masterpieces, while countless others were doing the laundry, getting married, and wondering why their clothes don't have more pockets. If you would like to hear the stories of women doing all of those things, check out Her Half of History at herhalfofhistory.com or wherever you get your podcasts.